People travel the world chasing beauty and adventure, but some destinations hide danger behind their charm. These are real places you can reach and explore, yet each one of them holds a risk that most people never see coming. From deadly natural forces to landscapes that you can fall into, here's 20 places that you can visit, but you probably shouldn't. Number 20, Surtsey Island in Iceland. All right, this island suddenly formed from a volcanic eruption in 1963. Surtsey Island is one of the youngest pieces of land on the planet, and it's one of the few places in the world where almost no one is allowed to visit it. It's about 32 kilometers off Iceland's southern coast, created when lava had met the cold seawater and solidified into a barren landscape. Today, it's a natural laboratory for studying how ecosystems develop without human interference. This island is strictly protected by Icelandic law, and only a handful of people with government permits can even land there each year. Even those people are forbidden from bringing anything like seeds, soil, or food that could introduce any foreign species. Helicopters have to land on designated spots, and all the waste is taken back to the mainland. Because of these protections, Surtsey has become one of the world's most valuable case studies in natural colonization. Researchers have recorded over 60 plant species and hundreds of invertebrates now living there. Seabirds like puffins and fulmars nest on the cliffs, and they help fertilize the soil with guano. And the island continues to erode. It loses roughly a meter of height each year to the North Atlantic. But for now, it's a rare glimpse into the earliest stages of life on this kind of new land. For us ordinary people, however, visiting Surtsey is off-limits. Unauthorized landings will lead to steep fines, and even sightseeing boats are required to stay a respectful distance away. It's one of those places where you could technically reach it, but you really shouldn't unless you're there to preserve what makes it unique, untouched, isolated, and purely natural. Number 19. Mount Mihara, Japan. About 100 kilometers south of Tokyo, on Izu Oshima Island, is Mount Mihara. This is an active volcano that tourists can visit, but few would want to linger near it. The volcano goes up to about 758 meters above sea level, and it last erupted in 1990. It sent lava flows close to the coast, and it forced thousands to evacuate. Its most infamous eruption, though, came in 1986, when it spewed fountains of lava hundreds of meters up. Although the eruption caused no deaths, it blanketed nearby villages in ash and drew international attention. But the mountain's reputation doesn't come only from geology. It's got a tragic human history. In the 1930s, Mount Mihara became a notorious site for suicides after a young woman's story spread across Japan. She reportedly jumped into its crater out of heartbreak, and within a year, hundreds followed. The government did eventually build fences and increase security here to prevent more deaths, and that part of its past is rarely publicized today. But it's part of what gives the mountain an eerie legacy. Visitors can still hike to the summit, and there's even a well-maintained trail there leading directly to the edge of the crater. The views of the Pacific here and the Tokyo skyline are breathtaking on clear days. Yet standing on the rim of a live volcano with visible steam vents and the faint smell of sulfur is a reminder of how unstable the ground beneath your feet really is. While the Japanese Meteorological Society closely monitors this volcano, it is unpredictable. It could awaken again with little warning, and evacuation routes on the small island are limited. Yeah, it's open to hikers, but it's a place that demands deep respect, and one where visiting feels less like an adventure and more like tempting fate. Number 18. The Runit Dome in the Marshall Islands. Deep in the Pacific Ocean sits a small, quiet island with one of the most toxic legacies on Earth. Runit Island is part of Eniwetok Atoll in the Marshall Islands. It was once the site of the U.S. nuclear testing during the Cold War. Between 1948 and 1958, the United States detonated 43 nuclear devices around this area, vaporizing entire islands and leaving behind an enormous amount of radioactive debris. In the late 1970s, the U.S. military returned to clean up the site. Workers, often without proper protection, collected contaminated soil and debris from across the atoll and dumped it into a massive crater left by one of the blasts. To seal it, they poured 358 concrete panels over the pit, creating what is now called the Runit Dome, or simply the Tomb. It measures about 115 meters across and about 8 meters high, and beneath it lies roughly 73,000 cubic meters of radioactive waste, including plutonium-contaminated soil and even fragments of atomic bomb test material. Now, what makes the Runit Dome so unsettling is that it's deteriorating. The concrete cover has begun to crack from decades of exposure to tropical heat, salt water, and storms. The groundwater below the dome was never lined or sealed, meaning that seawater moves freely in and out of the crater, potentially carrying radioactive material. The Marshallese government has repeatedly expressed concern that rising sea levels could one day flood the structure entirely. The U.S. government maintains that the dome is stable and the ocean around it already contains higher levels of background radiation from global fallout than the dome itself could release. Still, though, independent experts have found elevated plutonium levels in the nearby sediments. Now, technically, you could travel to Eniwetok Atoll with special permission, but Runit Island is off-limits. The local population, around 800 people, resettled after the cleanup. They live on nearby islands, but they avoid Runit completely. There's no tours, no visitors, and no protective barriers beyond a few warning signs. Standing on top of this dome wouldn't immediately kill you, but doing so is strictly prohibited for good reason. It shows you that the damage from nuclear testing really never truly goes away. Number 17. The Boiling River of Peru. In the Peruvian Amazon, within the Mayantiaku thermal region, there's a river that looks like any other until you touch it. It's known to locals as Xenetimpichka, meaning boiled with the heat of the sun. This 6-kilometer river flows at temperatures between 45 and 95 degrees Celsius. That's 113 to 203 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, in several spots, the water is literally boiling. Now, scientists long dismissed reports of boiling river as a myth, but in 2011, a Peruvian geoscientist named Andres Ruzo confirmed its existence. Now, unlike other geothermal rivers near volcanic areas, Xenetimpichka is far from any active volcano. This extreme heat is believed to come from deep geothermal circulation. The ecosystem here is beautiful, but it's also deadly. Small animals that fall into the water die almost instantly. The temperature gradient is so steep that a single step could separate survivable water from scalding heat. Steam is constantly rising above the jungle canopy, and the smell of sulfur lingers in the humid air. Local indigenous communities have long considered the river sacred and use its surroundings for traditional medicine, but they also treat it with deep caution. The region, though, is accessible through a combination of road travel, river navigation, and hiking through the rainforest, making it a journey that few will ever undertake. And even then, visiting requires permission from local guides as it sits on privately protected land. For scientists, it's a geological mystery worth studying. For everyone else, it's a reminder of how raw and unpredictable nature can be. It's a river you can visit, but one where one careless step could be your last. Number 16. Omyakon, Russia. Deep in the Sakha Republic of northeastern Siberia, Omyakon, it's often called the coldest permanently inhabited place on the planet. It's not completely off-limit to visitors, but one of those destinations that pushes the limits of endurance, and where visiting feels more like surviving. In January 1926, a temperature of negative 71.2 degrees Celsius, that's negative 96.2 degrees Fahrenheit, was recorded here, a record for any inhabited settlement. Yeah, no thanks. Even today, winter temperatures will sit below negative 50 Celsius for weeks at a time. At those levels, vehicles have to be kept running constantly to avoid freezing solid, and metal can shatter if it's struck too hard. Locals here wear fur boots and multiple layers of wool, but even then, prolonged exposure outdoors will lead to frostbite within minutes. Now, the town has around 500 people who live in wooden houses. They're heated by coal and wood stoves. Most work in reindeer herding, fishing, or small-scale animal husbandry. There's no central heating systems here or modern plumbing. Pipes would freeze almost instantly, so outhouses are standard and water is carried in by hand. Omyakon is nearly 900 kilometers from Yakutsk, the nearest major city, and the only road connecting the two is known as the Road of Bones. It was built by Gulag prisoners during Stalin's regime. In winter, it becomes an icy lifeline for trucks and buses, and in the summer, melting permafrost turns it into mud, which cuts the town off for days or weeks. But despite the conditions, some travelers make the journey to the site to see what life is like at negative 70 degrees Celsius. Local guides offer short tours, but visitors have to come fully equipped with Arctic-grade gear. there is also the psychological weight of the endless darkness here. Omicron experiences only a few hours of dim twilight during midwinter. This town is extraordinary, but its environment is punishing. For anyone not adapted to these kinds of extremes, Omicron is a place that you can technically visit, but one where you wouldn't last very long. Number 15. Kolmanskap, Namibia. Right on the edge of the Namib Desert, just a few kilometers inland from the coastal town of Luderitz, lies Kolmanskap, once one of the richest diamond towns in Africa, now a ghostly ruin swallowed by sand. Visiting is allowed, but it's a haunting experience and it feels like stepping into a dream, and a warning about how fast nature can reclaim what people abandon. Kolmanskap was founded in 1908 after a railway worker named Zacharias Luwala discovered a diamond in the desert sand. German colonists rushed in, and within a few years, the settlement had electricity, an ice factory, a bowling alley, a hospital, and even a theater. For a time, it was one of the wealthiest communities in the region. Diamonds were so abundant here that people reportedly found them at night by crawling in the moonlight. But that prosperity didn't last. After World War I, the diamond yield dropped, and richer deposits were discovered farther south. By the 1930s, Kolmanskap was already declining. By 1956, it was abandoned completely. The desert quickly began its takeover. Sandstorms filled the streets, buried staircases, and poured through shadowed windows. Today, dunes waist-high fill the interiors of homes that once belonged to diamond barons and engineers. But despite the eerie atmosphere, Kolmanskap has become a controlled tourist site that's managed by NEMDEB, the Namibian Diamond Company. Visitors need permits and access is limited to guided tours during specific hours to prevent vandalism and damage. The area is still part of a restricted diamond zone, meaning unauthorized exploration outside the designated areas can result in fines or arrest. Kolmanskap shows us how human ambition can rise, collapse, and disappear into the sand within a single lifetime. It's accessible and well-documented, but its remote setting, the desert heat, it makes it one of those places where visiting it feels both extraordinary and kind of wrong. It's like trespassing on the past. Number 14. Lake Karachay, Russia. In the Ural Mountains in Russia is Lake Karachay, a small body of water that for decades was among the most radioactive places on the planet. Yeah, it looks calm and ordinary, just like a quiet green lake surrounded by trees, but beneath this surface is a grim legacy of Cold War nuclear waste disposal. Starting in 1951, the Mayak Production Association, one of the Soviet Union's top-secret nuclear facilities, began dumping high-level radioactive waste into the lake. Mayak was built to produce plutonium for nuclear weapons, and environmental safety really wasn't a priority. With little understanding of long-term contamination, the lake became a dumping ground for years. By the 1960s, radiation levels around the lake were astronomical. Standing on the shore for just an hour could expose a person to a lethal dose. In 1967, a drought caused the water level to drop, exposing contaminated mud and silt that were picked up by wind and blown across the region. This fallout spread radioactive dust over thousands of square kilometers, contaminating villages and farmland, and sickening countless people. The Soviet government classified the disaster and the surrounding contamination for decades, only admitting its scale after the collapse of the USSR. In the 1990s, environmental surveys revealed that Lake Karachay's sediment still contained deadly concentrations of cesium-137 and strontium-90. To prevent any further spread, authorities filled the lake with concrete blocks and gravel to cap it, turning it into a sealed containment zone rather than a body of water. Today, of course, access is restricted, security fences and warning signs ring the perimeter, and entry requires official authorization. Radiation levels have dropped thanks to those containment efforts, but it's still not a safe place for anyone to linger. It still remains one of the places that shows how quickly human technology can poison the environment beyond recovery. Lake Karachay is not a scenic spot. It's a warning. You can visit with government permission, but it's a journey few people would ever want to make. Number 13. Mount Nyiragongo. In the Virunga Mountains of eastern Congo rises Mount Nyiragongo. It's one of the world's most active yet unpredictable volcanoes. It's home to the largest permanent lava lake known to science. It's possible to hike to the summit, sure, but it's not an adventure that you want to take unprepared. The crater contains a churning, glowing lake of molten lava nearly 200 meters deep. The surface is constantly shifting, and it bubbles and sometimes releases toxic gas. The volcano has erupted at least 30 times since 1882, with some of those eruptions among the fastest-moving lava flows ever recorded. In 2002, an eruption sent rivers of lava through a nearby city, destroying 15% of it and displacing hundreds of thousands. But despite this history, guided treks up to it became a popular attraction in recent years. Visitors could hike for 6 hours to reach the summit and camp overnight beside the crater, watching the glowing lava illuminate the clouds. The experience was both terrifying but kind of cool, a view few places on Earth could even match. That all changed in 2021, when it erupted again without warning. Lava reached Goma's outskirts within hours, and authorities had to evacuate hundreds of thousands. Dozens died, and part of the volcano's summit collapsed afterward. Since then, scientists have warned that pressure beneath the mountain is unstable. The area sits above a network of faults near Lake Kivu, which itself holds enormous quantities of dissolved methane and carbon dioxide. A large eruption here could, in theory, trigger a gas release, which is a rare but catastrophic event known as a limnic explosion. Today, though, Virunga National Park, which manages access to the volcano, has suspended climbs indefinitely. The mountain is under constant monitoring, and seismic activity remains elevated. In theory, you could still reach the base of it, but going any farther would just be reckless. It is a place of natural beauty and power, sure, but it's also one of the most dangerous environments on the planet, where the Earth itself never stops moving under your feet. Number 12. The Bikini Atoll, Marshall Islands. The Bikini Atoll, it looks like a peaceful ring of turquoise water and white sand in the Pacific, but it's one of the most contaminated places ever created by humans. Between 1946 and 58, the United States conducted 23 nuclear tests here, including the detonation of the first hydrogen bomb in 1954. The tests vaporized islands, poisoned the lagoons, and it displaced the local population. It's a damage that still continues to this day. Before the tests began, 167 residents of Bikini were told by American officials that they would be relocated for the good of mankind. They were moved to smaller, barren islands where food was scarce and conditions were poor. The promise that they could return soon proved to be false. Even after a limited resettlement effort decades later, radiation levels remained dangerously high and most Bikinians were forced to leave again. Today, Bikini is part of the Republic of the Marshall Islands and designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The lagoon is filled with the wrecks of warships that were sunk during the tests, including the USS Saratoga and the Japanese battleship Nagato. These kinds of ghostly relics make the site one of the most famous underwater graveyards in the world. Still, though, breaching Bikini requires special arrangements, government clearance, and a long journey from the Marshall Islands capital. There are no permanent facilities, no hotels, and no regular transport. Divers stay on liveaboard vessels, and you have to bring all supplies. Even short visits carry a degree of radiation exposure, which is low but measurable. You can go there, but doing so means walking through the shadow of the atomic age, where paradise itself was scarred by weapons that were meant to end all wars. Number 11. Tristan da Cunha, South Atlantic Ocean. Tristan da Cunha, it's officially the most remote inhabited island chain on Earth. It's so isolated that the nearest continent, Africa, is 2,400 kilometers away. The only way to reach it is by ship from Cape Town, a journey that takes nearly a week across open ocean. There's no airports here, no hotels, and no regular ferries. For anyone who manages to arrive, there's just one small settlement, Edinburgh of the Seven Seas, home to around 250 people. This island was first settled in the early 19th century by a mix of British soldiers, shipwreck survivors, and settlers from Scotland and the Netherlands. Life here moves at a rhythm that really hasn't changed much in a century. There's no malls, fast food restaurants, and there's only one small store supplied by a ship that visits a couple of times a year. Internet and phone service exist, but they're limited, and medical evacuations depend entirely on weather and the availability of transport. The people here, though, are self-sufficient. They rely on fishing, small-scale farming, and the export of lobster to survive. Education, healthcare, governance, they're all managed locally under the British Overseas Territory of St. Helena. Crime here is virtually non-existent, and the community is remarkably close-knit. But that isolation is absolute. Ships can be delayed for months by storms, and contact with the outside world can vanish without warning. Cruise ships do sometimes stop offshore for brief visits, but bad weather often prevents any landings. There's no tourism service beyond basic guest houses managed by the locals. Visiting Tristan da Cunha is less about danger and more about logistics and your own endurance. It's the kind of place where the world feels impossibly far away, and where, if something goes wrong, help could take days or weeks to arrive. Those who go here describe it as surreal, beautiful, and humbling. But it's also a place that kinda reminds you that even in the modern world, true isolation still exists, and it's not for everyone. Number 10. Kawa Ijen in Indonesia. On the island of Java in Indonesia sits Kawa Ijen, a volcano known for its phenomenon that seems impossible, electric blue fire spilling from its crater at night. It's one of the most mesmerizing natural sights on the planet, yet also one of the most dangerous places a person can visit. The blue fire really isn't lava, it's burning sulfuric gas. Deep within the crater, molten sulfur seeps from vents at temperatures that exceed 1100 Fahrenheit. When exposed to oxygen, the gas will ignite, which creates these bright blue flames that can rise several meters. At night, the glow lights up the landscape, making it look like something from another planet. Now, Kawa Ijen is also home to one of the largest, highly acidic crater lakes. Its milky turquoise color comes from dissolved metals and a pH near zero. That's comparable to battery acid. The lake is constantly emitting sulfur dioxide, which mixes with the air and water to form toxic clouds. Breathing this gas will cause burning in your throat and eyes, and prolonged exposure can be lethal without protection. Despite all the danger, though, local miners work inside the crater every day. They extract solid sulfur by hand, hacking away at yellow chunks from the cooled deposits and carrying loads of up to 150 pounds on their shoulders. Most of these guys do it without masks or safety gear for wages of just a few bucks a day. The air they breathe contains sulfur dioxide levels way beyond safe limits, and many miners suffer chronic respiratory illness. Tourists are allowed to visit here, and guided treks up the volcano have become common. Hikers usually start early in the morning to watch the flames before sunrise, equipped with gas masks, of course, provided by local guides. But the conditions here can change instantly. Sudden wind can blow toxic fumes directly onto the trail. Every few years, accidents happen when visitors underestimate the environment. The beauty of Kawa Ijen is undeniable. The colors, the sounds, and surreal fire are unlike anything else on Earth. But also, it's a place where the boundary between our wonder and danger is razor thin. Standing there too long or without proper protection means breathing poison in one of the most extraordinary, yet hostile places imaginable. Number 9. Lake Nyos, Cameroon. Sitting in a volcanic crater in northwestern Cameroon, Lake Nyos looks tranquil, a deep blue lake surrounded by green hills. Yet beneath the calm surface lies one of the most unusual and deadly natural hazards known to science, a limnic eruption. On August 21, 1986, without warning, the lake suddenly released a massive cloud of carbon dioxide gas. The invisible cloud rolled down the nearby valleys, displacing oxygen and suffocating more than 1,700 people within minutes. Many victims were found where they had fallen. No burns, no trauma, just the sudden absence of breathable air. The event remains one of the strangest natural disasters in modern history. Scientists later discovered that the lake sits on top of a pocket of volcanic gas that's deep underground. Over time, the gas seeps up through the bedrock and dissolves in the deep water. When conditions change, like a landslide or a temperature shift, the gas can suddenly erupt from solution, like shaking a bottle of soda and opening it all at once. The dense CO2 cloud then hugs the ground and flows outward, silently replacing the oxygen over a huge area. Since the disaster, though, international teams have installed degassing pipes that continuously vent the gas from the lake's depths to the surface, reducing the pressure buildup. These pipes have made another eruption less likely, but the system still requires constant monitoring. But standing by the lake today, it's hard to imagine the horror that once unfolded here. This water looks peaceful, reflects the clouds and trees and birds sing nearby, yet the danger remains invisible and ever-present. Visiting Lake Nyos means entering a land shaped by a silent killer. A place that appears calm, but carries a reminder that even the most beautiful natural settings can turn deadly without warning. Number 8. Lake Kivu, Rwanda. sitting on the border between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Lake Kivu is one of Africa's great lakes. It's also one of its most dangerous. Now, at first glance, it looks completely normal. Palm-fringed shores, calm blue water, and fishermen paddling dugout canoes at sunrise. But beneath the surface is something invisible and terrifying. A massive reservoir of carbon dioxide and methane gas that could, under the wrong conditions, erupt and kill millions. Kivu sits in the Albertine Rift. This is part of the East African Rift System, where volcanic activity has continuously fed gas from deep within the earth into the lake's bottom layers. Over thousands of years, these gases have dissolved into the cold, pressurized water, so much so that scientists estimate the lake holds around 300 cubic kilometers of carbon dioxide and 60 cubic kilometers of methane. Now, this setup is eerily similar to Lake Nyos in Cameroon, which suddenly released a deadly CO2 cloud. But Kivu is way larger. It's nearly 2,000 times as big, and its shores are home to more than 2 million people. If a similar limnic eruption ever happened here, the results would be catastrophic. A trigger like a volcanic eruption, a landslide, or an earthquake could disturb the deep layers, releasing the trapped gases in a violent rolling cloud. To prevent all that, Rwanda has begun extracting methane from the lake for electricity generation. The Kivu Watt Project, launched in 2015, uses large floating platforms to pump the gas-rich water from the deep layers to the surface and separate out the methane for power while safely venting the smaller amounts of CO2. Still though, the lake is dangerous. Monitoring equipment constantly tracks pressure levels and gas concentrations, and the 2002 eruption of nearby Mount Nyiragongo caused tremors felt across this area, which shows just how close the natural instability is. Tourists can visit the towns here on the lake's edge, both popular with locals for their beaches and scenic views, but few people realize the scale of the threat below them. Swimming and boating are safe in the upper layers, but deep diving is prohibited due to the toxic gas. Lake Kivu may appear calm, but it is a giant under pressure. It's quietly holding one of the most volatile natural time bombs on the planet. Number 7. Mount Merapi, Indonesia. Alright, back over to the island of Java, Mount Merapi. It's one of the most active and closely monitored volcanoes. Its name means Mountain of Fire in Javanese, and the title is well earned. Merapi erupts on an average of every few years, often with little warning. It is possible to visit Merapi, but it's a place where beauty and danger do exist side by side, and one miscalculation could prove fatal. Merapi rises to about 9,600 feet, and it sits near a town of Yogyakarta, a city of more than 400,000 people. The region's soil is incredibly rich. It's nourished by centuries of volcanic ash, which explains why people continue to live and farm so close. But the same geology that sustains life near here also threatens it. The eruptions are often explosive, producing fast-moving pyroclastic flows. These are clouds of hot gas and ash and rock that can reach speeds of over 100 kilometers an hour. One of the most devastating eruptions happened in 2010. The volcano blasted columns of ash 5 kilometers into the sky, forcing more than 300,000 people to evacuate. The pyroclastic flows wiped out entire villages, and nearly 400 people were killed. Even in the quieter years, though, Merapi is really never truly still. Seismic activity continues beneath the mountain, and scientists from Indonesia's Volcanology Agency monitor it around the clock. Climbing to the summit is possible, but it's risky and only allowed when seismic conditions are stable. The final ascent crosses loose volcanic rock where sudden gas emissions could disorient hikers. Guides insist on starting before dawn to avoid the heat, and every group has to register with local authorities. Even then, though, conditions can change without warning. An unexpected tremor, a small eruption, or even a shift in the wind carrying ash and gas downslope. For locals, the volcano is part of life itself. It's a source of destruction and renewal. But for outsiders, it's a destination that offers unforgettable views and a sobering sense of the Earth's raw power. You can go there, but you'll never forget that you're standing on one of the planet's most dangerous volcanoes. It's alive and restless beneath your feet. Number 6. The Singi Deba Maraha, Madagascar. In western Madagascar, it's one of the strangest and most treacherous lands on Earth, the Singi Deba Maraha. From a distance, it looks like a forest made of stone, thousands of razor-sharp limestone spires jutting up into the sky, forming a maze so dense and dangerous, only the most careful travelers ever dare to cross it. The word Singi comes from the Malagasy phrase meaning the place where one cannot walk barefoot, and it's not an exaggeration. This massive formation covers about 600 square kilometers. Rain and groundwater have gradually dissolved the limestone bedrock which carves these deep crevices and narrow canyons. The result is a labyrinth of vertical rock blades. Some of these are over 100 meters high, separated by chasms just wide enough for a person to slip through. In many areas, the rock are as sharp as knives. One fall slices through your skin or climbing gear. Despite all the hostility, though, it does support a unique ecosystem. The isolated pinnacles and hidden valleys down there create these microhabitats that shelter hundreds of species found nowhere else on the planet. Only a few areas are open to visitors, mainly within the National Park, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The Big Singi Circuit, one of the park's most famous routes, includes suspended walkways and fixed cables drilled into the rock, allowing travelers to cross above the spires. But even with safety gear, it is physically demanding and requires your complete attention. And while it is technically possible to visit here, it's not a trip for a casual tourist. The sharp rocks can shred your clothes, and the midday heat, often above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, reflects off the gray stone, which amplifies the temperature. There's limited water here, no phone signal, and no medical assistance for miles, and the terrain itself is designed to reject the human presence. But it's also a reminder that not every part of the Earth was meant to be walked on. It's a place that allows entry only to those willing to respect its hostility. It's like a natural fortress. It's largely unyielding to time and human curiosity. Number 5. The Quicksand Pits of the Pantanal, Brazil. In South America, stretching across Brazil, Bolivia, and Paraguay, lies the Pantanal, the world's largest tropical wetland. It is a great expanse of savannas, forests, and waterways that are teeming with life. But hidden beneath its beauty are areas even experienced locals approach with extreme caution. The deep quicksand pits formed by unstable sediment layers and seasonal flooding. These aren't the fictional movie traps that swallow people whole. They are real, unpredictable, and capable of trapping or suffocating anyone unlucky enough to step in. The Pantanal covers over 70,000 square miles. Most of it is flat and seasonally flooded. During the wet season, rivers overflow and saturate the soil, creating invisible pockets of soft, semi-liquid sand along the riverbanks. Beneath it lies a slurry of fine silt and water that behaves like a liquid under pressure. Step on it and you can sink to your knees or deeper before realizing what's even happening. The danger is the greatest in remote areas where few people travel. These quicksand basins form naturally where sediment-rich water slows and deposits fine particles. Now, the problem isn't so much drowning as exhaustion or exposure. Once you're trapped, it's extremely difficult to pull free without help. The suction effect increases with every movement, and panicking only makes things worse. Even wildlife occasionally falls victim. Cattle, capybaras, and jaguars have been found stuck or mired in these pits. Ecologists have to move carefully through here using poles to test the ground and traveling only with local guides who know the terrain. And of course, the same advice applies to tourists. Guided tours stay along established paths and elevated walkways. But despite the risks, it's a remarkable ecosystem here. It's home to one of the densest populations of wildlife in the Americas. Jaguars, giant otters, anacondas, and over 500 species of birds. It is a natural wonder, but it demands your respect. The ground itself can just betray you. What looks like firm sand can, in seconds, turn into a trap that grips you tighter with every struggle. It's a place where you can wander into danger without even realizing it. It's a landscape as deceptive as it is beautiful. One you can visit, but one that quietly reminds you that nature always decides the rules. Number 4. The Ijen Mine Sulfur Fields in Indonesia. At first light, the Ijen Volcanic Complex in East Java looks almost peaceful. Mist drifts across the pale cliffs, miners move like silhouettes along the rim, and the turquoise waters of the crater lake reflect the rising sun. But step closer, and the illusion breaks. The air burns your throat. A bitter yellow smoke rolls up from the vents in the ground. Men with damp cloths pressed to their faces disappear into clouds of sulfur dioxide so thick that breathing feels like swallowing acid. The Ijen crater is part of a chain that contains the world's largest high-temperature sulfur mine, still worked entirely by hand. Roughly 1,000 men earn their living here, descending 200 meters into the crater each day to collect solid sulfur. This sulfur condenses around ceramic pipes that are driven into fumaroles. These pipes channel gases that emit from the magma chamber at more than 600 degrees Celsius. When the gas cools, they deposit bright yellow sulfur, which miners crack loose with iron bars and carry back up in baskets balanced across their shoulders. Each load weighs about 60 to 80 kilograms, almost 150 pounds. The climb from the crater floor to the rim takes nearly an hour. Many miners make two trips per day. Their pay averages the equivalent of about 10 to 15 bucks. It's good by rural standards, but earned at an enormous cost to your health. The fumes destroy your teeth, they scar your lungs and burn your eyes. Few miners reach old age without chronic respiratory disease. The government has tried to balance economic benefit and safety. Still though, accidents happen. Sudden changes in wind can engulf a group in choking smoke, and even short exposure can cause severe coughing or chemical burns. In 2018, an explosion inside one fumarole released a burst of hot gas that injured dozens of miners and forced an evacuation. Yet, for the miners, leaving here isn't an option. The work provides steady income in an area where employment is scarce. Some families have mined sulfur here for three generations, and tourists often buy their carvings, small figurines molded from cooled sulfur, and pose for photos to create a strange coexistence of hardship and spectacle. Every step down one of these trails brings you closer to air that can kill small animals in seconds. It's possible to go there, sure, to watch men wrestle blocks of bright yellow stone from a living volcano, but few leave without the uneasy sense that they've witnessed human endurance that's been pushed to its limit. Number 3. The Oklo Natural Nuclear Reactor in Gabon. In the equatorial forests of Gabon in western Central Africa, there's an unremarkable mining site that once changed how scientists understood the planet. On the surface, it looks ordinary. It's overgrown, it's got earthworks, rusting fences, and the remnants of uranium pits. But buried in that soil lies one of the strangest and most dangerous places, a set of natural nuclear reactors that ran on their own nearly 2 billion years ago. Now, the Oklo region doesn't appear threatening. It's quiet, it's humid, it's filled with the sounds of insects, yet scientifically speaking, it's a place that once generated nuclear fission naturally, long before humans existed. The story begins in 1972. At the time, France had imported uranium from Gabon, which is one of its main suppliers. The uranium came from a mine operated by the French Atomic Energy Commission near Oklo. When routine chemical tests were done on a shipment, scientists noticed something strange. The uranium contained a lower percentage of the isotope uranium-235 than any natural sample ever recorded. Normally, uranium mined anywhere on Earth contains about 0.72% of U-235. The Oklo ore measured only 0.717. Now, that difference might seem trivial, but to nuclear scientists, it was enormous. Too large to be explained by an error, and too small to result from industrial processing. France's nuclear experts feared that someone might have stolen the fissile material. But as they analyzed the geology of the Oklo deposit, the truth turned out to be even stranger. Roughly 1.7 billion years ago, when uranium-235 was more abundant in the Earth's crust, a series of chemical conditions allowed certain seams of ore to achieve a critical mass. Underground water acted as a neutron moderator in the same way the role heavy water plays in a human-made reactor. As the uranium atoms split, they released heat, which boiled the water away and slowed the reaction. When the groundwater returned, the reaction resumed. This natural cycle continued intermittently for hundreds of thousands of years. In essence, nature had built a working nuclear reactor complete with an automatic self-regulation. 16 separate reaction zones have since been identified in this region. Each one functioned just like a modern reactor core, generating energy equivalent to about 100 kilowatts. That's enough to power a small town. Only this town existed in the Paleo-Proterozoic era, long before multicellular life. Now, the site is scientifically invaluable. It's also one of the places, though, that the public is better off admiring from afar. The ore deposits here still contain radioactive residues. Entry, of course, requires permits, and even then, you have to only stay for short periods. Locals know the mine's history, but they tend to avoid any deep pits. The remnants of the 20th century mining infrastructure, like shafts, tunnels, and concrete foundations, are slowly being reclaimed by the forest. But Oklo isn't risk-free. Uranium mining elsewhere in Gabon left environmental scars, like tailing piles, contaminated groundwater, and health effects on miners from the colonial and post-colonial eras. France's former state-owned company, Kojima, now Orano, conducted cleanup operations in the early 2000s, but independent researchers have documented elevated background radiation in the nearby soil. Number 2. The Houtuan Ghost Village in Shengshan Island, China. About 64 kilometers east of Shanghai lies a village that seems, at first glance, like something out of a dream. Every building, stairway, and courtyard has been swallowed by green. Ivy cascades down the rooftops, vines climb through empty windows, and the whole settlement appears to have melted back into the hill. This is Houtuan, a fishing village that nature reclaimed completely. For most of the 20th century, Houtuan became home to several thousand people who made their living from the ocean. The harbor was small but rich with fish and seaweed, and the surrounding cliffs protected it from typhoons. Then, in the late 1980s and early 90s, the community began to shrink. The decline wasn't sudden, it was slow and logistical. Houtuan sits in a steep valley with only narrow paths connecting it to the rest of the island. Deliveries were made by small boats and fresh water had to be carried in manually. When the Chinese government began centralizing fishing operations and expanding ports elsewhere, the village's isolation became unsustainable. Younger residents left first, seeking jobs in mainland cities or large harbors. Schools then closed and the last shop shut its doors in the early 2000s. By 2002, the government officially relocated the remaining residents to a neighboring settlement. A few older villagers stayed behind for a time, but eventually even they left. With no one to prune, sweep, or repair, the vegetation took over astonishingly fast. When photos of Houtuan surfaced online around 2015, the images went viral. The buildings, once gray and cracked, were now coated in emerald foliage, giving the illusion that the entire hill had transformed. Tourists who make the journey here often describe an eerie silence once they leave a main trail. There's no vehicles, no machines, and very few people. The only sounds are waves echoing off the cliffs, cicadas buzzing in the humidity, and the wind moving through the vines that now serve as roofs and curtains. It's not just the look of the place that's haunting, it's how complete the takeover feels. Many of the homes are still recognizable inside, though the interiors have been stripped bare. The schoolhouse has desks half buried in leaves, and it's the kind of decay that tells a story without needing words. It's not tragedy, it's inevitability. The earth, when left alone, doesn't hesitate to erase. Safety warnings posted around are serious. The vegetation hides some sudden drops and the terrain becomes slick with rain. Stepping off the path can lead into pits that are filled with vines and snakes that use the abandoned walls as shelter. Visitors are told to carry water, wear sturdy shoes, and turn back before sunset. After dark, the paths vanish into the shadows. In less than 20 years, native plants and invasive vines have created a self-sustaining ecosystem that now shelters birds, insects, and mammals. Botanists note that the vegetation here has adapted rapidly, which created unique microhabitats around the walls and rooftops where humidity remains trapped longer than an open forest. Number 1. The Zone of Silence, the Mapimi Desert in Mexico. Northern Mexico's Chihuahuan Desert is a huge arid plain that locals called La Zona del Silencio, the Zone of Silence. It sits near the intersection of the states of Durango, Coahuila, and Chihuahua, and it looks, at first glance, like any other remote desert. But for more than a half a century, this place has carried a strange reputation. Radio signals just cut out. Compasses spin erratically and electronics fail without warning. Some travelers have compared it to the Bermuda Triangle of the desert. Most of the stories of the Zone of Silence trace back to a single event in July of 1970, when a U.S. Air Force rocket misfired during a test from the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. The rocket was supposed to land hundreds of kilometers north, but it veered off course and crashed deep inside Mexican territory. The missile carried two small containers of radioactive cobalt-57 intended for experiments. Both were recovered, but by the time the U.S. and Mexican teams arrived, the region had already been nicknamed La Zona del Silencio by locals, who noticed that radio transmissions didn't work properly there. Investigations later found that the area's patchy communication wasn't supernatural at all. It was due to magnetic anomalies in the region. Yet the nickname stuck, and with it came a flood of rumors. Over the years, stories spread of meteorite falls, strange lights in the sky, mutations in the desert plants, and magnetic stones that hum. In the 1970s and 80s, curious researchers, UFO enthusiasts, and journalists began visiting, each of them adding a new layer of speculation. Daytime temperatures here can exceed 113 Fahrenheit, while nights plummet close to freezing. The nearest settlement, Ceballos, lies about more than 50 kilometers away, and beyond it, there's no paved roads, only rough tracks navigable by four-wheel drive. The Mexican government officially designated this area as the Mapimi Biosphere Reserve in 1979, and scientists now study climate resilience, desertification, and biodiversity here. But the myth persists. The lack of noise and the way the radio devices go silent in pockets of terrain give visitors an uncanny sense of detachment. What's real is the isolation. It's one of the most remote inhabited deserts in North America. The few residents who remain live there in small ranches and depend on truck deliveries for supplies. For them, the silence isn't a mystery, it's a way of life. There's no cell coverage, no reliable electricity, and no doctors within hours. Researchers still monitor residual cobalt from the 1970s rocket crash, though radiation levels are now considered safe. The real danger isn't invisible rays, it's the desert itself. The heat and remoteness can defeat even experienced travelers. Every year, a few explorers have to be retrieved after underestimating the distance between water points. Those who go prepared often leave with a deep sense of unease mixed with wonder. The zone of silence, it has no spectacle. It's got no monuments, it's just emptiness that feels endless. Step too far into it, and you'll understand how quickly the world forgets once you lose a signal. It's a place where technology falters, time slows down, and the only sound is your own breath, echoing in a desert that doesn't care whether you ever make it back.